Nick. Blog Talk Radio.
Take down this phone number. We're using our alternate recording partner, okay? 818-739-8957. Right, you call in, and she should and send her that number and have her call in by regular telephone. Okay, no speaker necessary, no headphones necessary, just telephone. Okay, just let her know, and we'll get started as soon as everyone's on. I'm cutting you off of this now. Okay.
I have to get my notes. They're on the table. Can you hear me? Right. Okay. Should I hang up?
No, don't hang up.
Okay, hold on.
Nick, is that you?
Can you hear me, Stuart?
Yeah, I hear you fine. We'll wait for Jennifer now.
I just sent her that phone number.
Now?
I'm on now, yes.
Okay, I apologize. Whatever was with the gremlins that I thought we ironed out yesterday just came back because I could see
it
you.
It looks like it's something with Ringer because...
Yeah, it was something with Ringer,
yeah.
and whatever system you were using because Nick got on okay, but you were showing up as connected, but I couldn't see you and couldn't hear you. You know, I couldn't see your...
It wouldn't sound meter.
And I... Yeah. So
anyway.
At any rate, we're okay now, and Adrian is ready for you, and we'll just have to set up our clocks, and you guys can get going. Nick, I'm putting you on silent on my end. So
great.
You know, okay, and I'm putting myself on silent.
Great.
Okay, Jennifer, I don't have to pre-prepare you. The only thing is, I'll ask Stuart. Are you doing the music in now, or how are you doing it?
I'm sorry, what are you saying?
Are you integrating the music now that we're on a different platform, or how are you playing?
Yes, now I'm integrating the music.
Okay, good. And for you, I don't know about your timing. If you thought you were going to be done at 3, do you want to do a shorter show, or do you have a little bit more time?
No, I have time. I just let me just send a quick email and say I'm running late. My next meeting is just with one person, so...
Okay, so Dr. Martin is sending an email that she's running late, so let's wait until she gets back on and she's ready to talk to us, okay?
Ready.
Just tell me.
She
is ready,
I'm
okay.
Good.
All right, now we have to be quiet again.
3 seconds of 10:50 silence.
Right.
We'll hear the music.
Good, all right, go. We're good. Right. Okay. So in this particular one, he has to set up the music. So we'll just be another minute, and I again will make it.
Okay, Sue. So you.
When
you
I look
the music,
in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles.
Thought you were going to give me a signal.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, 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 and this is Generation Bold, and this is the Fountain of Truth about aging. But today we're going to be dealing with a topic that doesn't have to do with aging alone. It has to do with sleep, and that is something that every one of us does all over the world at least once a day. But in the time of a pandemic, we are having some problems with sleep. Even those of us who are the sturdiest when it comes to our sleep habits are wondering, what's going to happen next in my life? And that can keep you up. And I'm so much looking forward to this because our guest, Dr. Jennifer Martin, serves on the board of directors of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. If you want to look them up, they're the AASM. And she's a board certified in behavioral sleep medicine by the American Board of Sleep Medicine. And she's a professor over at David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. And we have had several professors, several researchers from that school before. And it's always so illuminating because they're on top of their game. So today, we are going to talk to all of you who may not be on top of your game anymore because you're losing sleep. We will be speaking about insomnia. We'll be speaking about what you can do about it, the various types, and whether or not everything will be a new normal when it comes to sleep, or you'll get back to the old normal after the worries over this pandemic are over. These are the questions we're asking ourselves. But I have the privilege of asking them of Dr. Martin. So thank you for being with me today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about this. You say that there are several actual types of insomnia. It's not just one monolith that we all experience the same way. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Sure. We really think about two main types of insomnia. One is short-term or acute insomnia. This is the kind of sleep disturbance we might have when something stressful is going on in our life. I always remember the example of not sleeping well the night before we signed the mortgage paperwork on our first house, for example.
Right.
And we think about this as really just a normal human stress reaction. For some people, though, that sleep disturbance doesn't go away even when the stressful situation is resolved. So what can happen is that poor sleep can take on a life of its own, and we call that chronic insomnia. Chronic insomnia is a clinical disorder that needs specific attention. If it goes on for 3 months or longer, happens at least 3 times a week, and affects how a person feels or functions during the day. So those are really the two main types of insomnia that we think about conceptually, is acute or short-term insomnia and chronic insomnia, which represents a clinical disorder.
Okay, so let's talk about what I think is on everyone's mind. Obviously, a pandemic, having lost your job because of it or have been suspended because of it, is in a way, we'll call that environmental. Something happened in your situation. But if it goes on for a long enough time, could that become chronic insomnia? In other words, if you're thinking about your worries, even though they are real and they are not internal, they come from external stress, but it continues because the pandemic continues, are we going to see more of these chronic conditions, or will we snap back to the old normal?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't think we know yet what's going to happen to people's sleep over the long run. It's pretty common that people who go on to develop chronic insomnia problems, something really kind of interesting happens. Some people have a stressful event. When it goes away, their sleep goes back to normal. And these tend to be people who have generally good sleep in the first place and have habits and routines that support getting back on track quickly. But some people, the insomnia or the poor sleep actually takes on a life of its own, and they find themselves getting into bed and having thoughts like, I wonder how hard it's going to be tonight. I wonder if I'm going to wake up at 3 o'clock again. If I don't get a good night's sleep tonight, I just don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow. I mean, this will be the fourth night in a row. And those thoughts and that approach to sleep actually perpetuate the problem even after the stressful situation resolves. So I think as many of us think past the pandemic, this is one of the big questions we have. Will people get their sleep back on track as their routines and habits get back to normal, or will this be a longstanding issue for a lot of folks who are struggling now?
Yeah, you know, I tend to tell true stories about my own self on my shows and in my blog, and I want to make people feel better by telling them a bad story for a second, and then I want to ask you what we can do about this kind of thing. So my house had a flood, and I didn't live there for a while. But I had another place, and there was a tenant who wasn't paying rent. They wouldn't move. And the court kept expanding this, and I was basically homeless. This is true. So I was living in a residential hotel. And my sleep habits, as you say, Dr. Martin, were very good up until that time. And then I lost a lot of sleep, and it went for six months. And I wondered what would happen. Well, because I originally had good sleep habits, exercise habits, nutrition, and so on, it all worked out. And I want people to know that it is possible to go through several months of just being displaced, we'll say. And yet, you can snap back. Now, let's go to that issue. And you mentioned, if you have good sleep habits to begin with, what are good sleep habits? Let's take the next part of our segment, a couple of minutes, to just lay that out before we take our break and talk about what we could do if we don't have good sleep habits. What are good sleep habits?
Good sleep habits center on just a few things, which I hesitate to call simple because I don't think they're simple. One of the most important sleep habits is figuring out how much you need to sleep and spending the right amount of time in bed. So if you're the kind of person who needs to sleep about 7.5 hours at night, you should spend about 7.5, maybe 8 hours in bed. The way you know if you're spending the right amount of time in bed is by thinking about how you feel during the day. You should feel you know, pretty alert. You should be able to stay awake throughout the day. The second thing is about timing. So going to bed and getting up around the same time each day. Now, we can be a little bit flexible about this. You know, I often use the metaphor, it's okay to have cake on your birthday, but you can't have cake every day. That would be bad nutrition. So it's okay to make exceptions.
That's too bad. Yes. Okay.
Maybe I shouldn't make assumptions. It's okay to deviate from your schedule occasionally, but most people sleep best if their schedule only varies less than an hour from day to day. So if you typically get up at 6 on the weekends, maybe you should be up by 7 on the weekends, or excuse me, on the week days, and then you should be up by 7 on the weekends. If you typically go to bed, you know, at 10:30, 11, you know, you should think about, you know, a range of within an hour there as well. That's how most people sleep best, and those are the really important sleep habits. There are a few other things that get in the way. Go ahead.
Now, I want to talk about the things that get in the way, and we're going to do that right after our break. I want to do talk very much about the things that get in the way. And, of course, the things that we can do so they don't and they stop getting in the way. Because, as you said, it isn't so simple. And it's getting less and less simple in a time when we have not just stress, but the worry about worrying. What's going to happen is really the big issue for most people's stress. They just don't know. It's more than they know something bad is going to happen. That they can cope with. It's the unknown that most of us are stressed over. And we will be right back to see if we can put some knowns back into our sleep habits. Don't you go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, now you see how it goes. That's the real way, okay? And
okay.
Yes, the sound came out terrific. All right. So now we're going to go into second stage, and then we're going to talk about what you said, the barriers. We'll start with the barriers, which you were going to talk about, and then what can we do about them? And again, I'll ask, is there any one thing that you would like to bring out to make sure that I ask the question?
In this specific area of barriers?
Or at all.
Sleep or,
or at all.
Yeah, I think one of the other key points is that when people try all of these things on their own and they're still not sleeping well, it's really important that they reach out for help to a healthcare provider.
Got it. Okay, Stuart, we are ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg. I am so happy to talk with all of you. And I'm just wondering if you're getting out there. Things are slowly, slowly moving. I'm hearing a little bit more from my friends who are maybe going to the beach or finally getting to a restaurant. What's happening with you? Well, one of those things that may be happening to all of you is an issue with sleep. And that is why I, in my blog, Aging for Beginners, I did have my latest article, and it's called ZZZ. This article could put you to sleep, and that's a good thing because sleep is so important. And today on my podcast, we are speaking with a true sleep expert, Dr. Jennifer Martin, serving on the board of directors of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine and a professor at a school you know, David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, because we have many guests from that university. Now, you don't know this, perhaps, maybe you did not get the memo, but June 22nd in past was Insomnia Awareness Night, and the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the Society of Behavioral Sleep Medicine, the American Alliance for Healthy Sleep really made an effort to focus on chronic insomnia because of what's going on with this pandemic. And I'm hoping to put together this podcast and our article and get it to you through our newsletter as well as through all of its disseminators, because although June 22nd was insomnia night, many of us are going to have many insomnia nights and days. So Dr. Martin, right before we took our little break, you had said, you know, these are the things we do for successful sleep, but there are barriers. And that's what I would like to talk about right now. What barriers is the nation actually experiencing right now, or what might we experience individually?
Well, I always like to remind myself that we have a number of industries that compete with our sleep. It's not an accident that when you're watching a television show on a streaming video service, that it automatically goes to the next episode. So taking good care of your sleep is not easy. There's all kinds of energy drinks out there, and again, companies making money trying to keep us awake, and in this technology space, keep our eyes on a screen. So one of the things that I think we have to be really mindful of, I kind of think about them as threats to healthy sleep, is how we interact with the technology around us. During the pandemic, one of the things that I think has been a real challenge for folks is checking the news, looking at social media, doing all of those things just before they get into bed. So interacting with those kinds of messages, I think, can make it really hard for folks to separate from the stress and anxieties of the day and allow their mind and their body to wind down and fall asleep easily.
Some people have stopped listening to the news because it is so stressful, and imagine listening to it right before you're trying to fall asleep.
That's right. So that's a really big one. As we were talking about earlier, you know, the scaffolding around our sleep routines have kind of fallen apart. So if you're no longer working, or if you, you know, used to have a routine of getting up in the morning and going and, you know, going to a gym for exercise, those activities that stabilize healthy sleep routines have largely disappeared. And I think as people are starting to go back to some of these things, it might feel good to go back to the routine, but I think there's an added layer of anxiety as well. I live in California, and we're now experiencing closing of things that were open just a few weeks ago, and I think it's, you know, we're going to be going back and forth in terms of what activities are available to us for a while. Another thing that we know has happened. Go ahead.
Before we go on, I just want to talk to you about that as well. You're right, because people are going back, they're starting to travel, they're starting to have meetings, they're starting to go to the restaurants, and they're worried. They're worried, is somebody else wearing a mask? If they're not wearing a mask, should we say something? I mean, these are what you call the chronic sleep issues are not stopping just because, maybe when we have the vaccine and we really think it's over and it's out of mind. But this is not stopping. And I feel and actually fear that maybe some people who are doing okay with their sleeping might start to not be doing okay, and they should be mindful and aware. What are some more things that they should be aware of other than technology and news and self-aggravation?
Well, and I want to say that in general, the rule of thumb should be to keep all of that out of the bedroom, so to speak. So in the last hour or two before sleep, we really want to create a mindset where we can wind down and get some good rest. Another thing that we've seen during the pandemic, actually, is people consuming more alcohol. Alcohol is really the enemy of sleep, and it tricks us, because when people drink alcohol, they tend to feel relaxed and in some cases even sleepy. But what happens is alcohol is metabolized, is that it wakes you right back up again. So the enzymes that our body uses to metabolize alcohol disrupt our sleep. So that's another thing that we've seen more during the pandemic. And again, I think those of us who are, you know, work in mental health are concerned about the long-term habits that might come with regular consumption of alcohol in current times.
First, no cake every day. Now the alcohol is gone.
I know. I'm taking all the taking all the fun out of it, huh?
You're taking all the fun out of the pandemic. Yes.
Exactly. Right.
Anyway,
yeah.
But I want to tell you a funny story, and then I want to talk to you about the fact that you are a doctor. There are doctors that have to do with helping you sleep. And that's one of the main points you want to bring out. We're not alone. But I will tell you something just on your topic that I find amusing, but it's not so funny. For Mother's Day, I wanted to have a smartwatch. Why? Because my biohacker friends, who are very young, told me that they're watching their sleep. And when I buy a smartwatch, it must measure my sleep. And I'll wear it when I'm asleep, and it'll tell me how deep my sleep is and so on. So meanwhile, Dr. Martin, my watch has a little LED light in it. And every time something happens with the sleep, it lights up and wakes me up.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I feel like this is one of the biggest modern myths, is that there is a piece of technology that you can take to bed with you that will help you sleep better. That's
well, it
didn't.
It wakes me up.
True. Right, exactly. Yeah.
I can't win.
I think it does speak to people's genuine curiosity about sleep, though. It's a bit of a mystery, and I think as people are starting to understand the health benefits of sleep, that's created an environment where people want to understand it better. So there are all kinds of devices and apps and things like that that you can use to measure your sleep, but the true measure of good sleep is how you feel during the day.
And how you feel when you wake up in the morning, too. I think that I could tell how the sleep has gone without the watch, which I now take off before I go to sleep.
Right.
It's great for telling me how many miles I walked, but it's not so great for telling me how good my sleep was. Well, when we come back, I want to focus on what we can do from a medical point of view, what types of doctors are around. We have talked in the past about getting a sleep study. Of course, we've talked many times about sleep apnea, but this is different. The idea of insomnia or the inability to sleep is removed from the issues of sleep apnea, although you can have both. When we come back, I want to talk about what we can ask of a doctor. Who do we go to? Is it a mental issue? Is it an emotional issue? Is it a physical issue? And who's in charge when it comes to the medical protocols for us? Don't you guys go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, so we're quickly going into the third segment already. Amazing. And now we want to talk about the medical help that's out there, okay? I don't know if we'll have a drop in. And this is speeding along, which is very, very good for you, I think. You're very generous with your time, let me tell you. I apologize. We are ready. I'll be
glad
quiet.
It worked out.
Okay. Yes. Go ahead, Sue. Now we'll be quiet.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, about aging. I have two very important websites to send you to. One of them, if you go to, you won't need the other. One of them is our radio show website, generationboldradio.com. Very easy, generationboldradio.com. The other is my website, adrienneberg.com, A-D-R-I-A-N-E, Berg, B-E-R-G.com. In both cases, you can go ahead and give me your email address. Everything we do is entirely free of charge. And what you will find is that you will get a Monday newsletter telling you the blog or the podcast. It will even have a little video of some of the most important parts of our podcast. It has three resources that I pick out every single week that I think is very important for successful aging, usually free, that you'd never know about or under the radar, and a lot of other information on a weekly basis. But most importantly, there are conferences all over the place. that are now Zoom. You don't even have to go. But they are free, and they really can enhance your life. So if you go to either one of these, for example, generationboldradio.com or adrianberg.com, let me have your email. I'll inform you every single Monday of what's going on. I'll give you a quick example. In October 12th through 14th, the geroscientists are gathering for MetaBesity 2020. Very detailed information and mostly not available to the public. But I'm directing that conference, and so you're invited. How would you register free of charge? Well, you'll be able to do that if I know your email address and I can send you an invitation. That's just one of many, many insider conferences on successful aging and good health that we have as a group, as a tribe, as they like to say. Now, one of those things that you'll also notice is we have a lot of great information on our blog, Aging for Beginners, but sometimes I can't fit everything in. And so that extra information will be given to you also in our newsletter. Now, right now, we are talking about a topic that was covered on a latest blog of mine, and that is sleep. We're speaking to Dr. Jennifer Martin, who serves on the board of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Fairly recently in June 22nd, was Insomnia Awareness Night, but many of us, unfortunately, are aware of insomnia every night. You didn't need a special night for that. It was hosted by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, Society of Behavioral Sleep Medicine, American Alliance of Healthy Sleep, all of which have websites. And you can go to them, and you will find them on our radio website as well as we post Dr. Martin's interview with us. But I wanted to say, Dr. Martin, that the idea of insomnia and sleep, we're going to be talking about this on a personal level. But the research from your groups estimate that insomnia is associated with 253 million days of lost work every year. That means people just cannot get up and go to work, and more than $100 billion in annual costs due to the indirect health effects of insomnia. So this is very nationally serious and, of course, individually. So let's go. Somebody is having an issue with their sleep. They're being tortured by it every day. What can they do? What type of doctor would they see?
Well, this is something that I'm very passionate about. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I focus pretty exclusively on helping people who have chronic insomnia. And when people come to see me, the average length of time that they have been struggling with their sleep is more than 10 years.
Oh.
And this always makes me sad to think that someone has been working on this and trying everything that they can think of, a lot of times spending a lot of money on supplements and herbs and things that, quite frankly, have little scientific evidence to support their use. And they come and see someone like me as a last resort. And I wish that people would reach out for help sooner. So I mentioned earlier in your show today that, you know, once you've been struggling for 3 months or more, we consider that a pretty sticky insomnia problem that isn't going to go away on its own. A lot of times the best place to start is with a good, trusted primary care provider. But it's helpful to know what to ask. The current guidelines about how to treat insomnia actually suggest that we should try non-medication approaches before medications, that medications, because of some of the side effects and concerns, should be saved for, you know, kind of a last resort. The best available treatment right now is something called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. It's usually provided by psychologists or other people who do psychotherapies, like someone you might see for anxiety or depression. But there are also some self-guided treatments and some online programs that folks can use if either they don't have access to a person like that or if they, you know, again, they want to try a self-guided approach before they go see a clinical provider. Another place to start, which is what I usually suggest to people, is with an accredited sleep disorder center. And you mentioned the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. We have a website that's a resource for the public called sleepeducation.org. And through that website, you can find an accredited center by looking for your zip code. And accredited centers often have connections to folks who provide really good insomnia treatment if they don't have someone in-house. So I think the most important thing is don't suffer alone. Reach out for help. There's very effective treatments. And, you know, I think from the perspective of a person struggling with insomnia, the hardest part is just figuring out where to get the help that you need.
Yes, now one of the things we are going to be covering in an intense both blog and a podcast will be what Medicare covers and also what Medicaid covers. Because and I'm a big critic of this, I have to tell you this, Dr. Martin, there's very little prevention. There's very little real resources for lifestyle disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And I would... and so I'm on a campaign to make this happen, and I can't make it happen if people don't know what's covered and what isn't covered. So I'm definitely going to be looking at this specifically with regard to sleep and also the type of services that you just outlined. It's really, really, really important. Now, let us say, and I'm going to be blunt here, one of the things I know from my geroscientist friends and my pharmaceutical friends is you've got to have a disease or a disorder before you can have a pill from the FDA or before you can have a Medicare coverage. So what are some of the names that folks who are experts in your field put to the issue of sleep disorder? Because the layman will tell you, I can't sleep. That's their problem. They'll tell you they can't sleep. They won't say I have a heart condition. So what are some of the names that are under the rubric of, other than insomnia, which I think we do know as laymen, for sleep disorders?
Well, I want to start with insomnia because I guess this is one of our topic, but really it is that, you know, 3 months and it affects how you feel or function during the day. That would mean that you meet diagnostic criteria for a clinical disorder, and cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia would be covered by insurance in the same way that other psychotherapy or mental health treatments are covered. So that's a bit of good news that this isn't kind of a special case. One of the challenges, though, when people know they're not sleeping well, and is that they it's a little bit of a fact-finding mission to figure out what sleep disorder they have. So people usually present and say, I can't sleep at night or I'm tired during the day. And then a really good sleep specialist sometimes is the right type of detective to figure out what the diagnosis is. As you mentioned earlier, sleep apnea and insomnia are the two most common sleep disorders across age groups, but especially in older folks. And so those are the two things that a lot of times when a provider is seeing a patient, they will call it an evaluation for one of those two disorders. But there are other sleep disorders that that we might suspect. So one example might be in people who, as they age, are at higher risk for something called REM behavior disorder, which is diagnosed with the laboratory sleep study, and it means that people are actually acting out their dreams. But that's a condition that is less common, and it might take the wise eyes of a specialist to really figure out what it is. So again, I always advocate for starting with a sleep specialist, getting a referral to someone local to you if that's feasible. And you know, once they take a good history, then they can think about all the possible causes of either poor sleep at night or sleepiness during the day.
And before we stop our segment and wrap up this particular segment, tell us one more time, what was the website that you sent us all to?
It's called sleepeducation.org. That is the public education website for the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. And there are actually quite a lot of good resources there about a variety of sleep disorders people might want to read more about.
Well, I certainly do, and we shall be back. Don't you guys go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, 'cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da.
Okay, now I have some questions for our last segment that are just happen to be interesting to me, but I don't know. I don't want to miss anything that would be interesting to you. Let me tell you the two that they are. One of them is the fact that we're sequestered and we are seeing our family members much more, even spouses that we live with anyway. We used to have separations from. And so if one has a sleep disorder now, everybody's got a sleep disorder. So I just don't know if there's any protocol. Should they go to another bedroom? Should they stop, you know, that kind of thing? Because I did a relationship article, and it was very well received. People are really having issues with just their new relationship. Mm-hmm. The second question I had was about children. The minute you have a kid, you're going to say, oh, he was a great sleeper. Or they never slept. Is there any relationship between how, and I have a two-year-old, and of course most of the people, two-year-old grandchild, most of the people listening are grandparents. Is there any relationship between sleep in babies or young age and what we'll be like as adults? So those are two, just interesting to me, but I don't want to miss something more clinical that you would like to bring out.
No, I think those would both be really good, and maybe if we talk a little bit about kids, I'd say a little bit about what we're seeing in teenagers right now.
Ah, excellent.
Now that they don't have to get up so early and go to school.
Right. My goodness. All right, we're going to start with that part, too. All right, Stuart, we are ready. Now, this is our last segment, by the way.
Okay.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth about Aging. We're going into our sixth year, I think, but this show never ages. There is always so much to discuss, and I'm not even going to give you a big build-up. Just go to GenerationBoldRadio.com, give us your email address, get our every Monday newsletter, and you'll know all about our blogs, our conferences. It's always free, and everything is a freebie, even my hints and tips on successful aging. So that's GenerationBoldRadio.com, and tell your friends. So we are discussing sleep in the time of coronavirus. That is really what we're doing with Dr. Jennifer Martin, serving on the board of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine and also professor over at David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. So I was talking during the break to Dr. Martin about two things that are on my mind because of the pandemic. One, Dr. Martin, is that we are sleeping together with our spouses, but we used to be separate from them during the day. And if one has a sleep problem, now the other does. I don't know. What's the protocol for that when you're in a – or even grandma. Grandma is now living with us very frequently. And as you mentioned, older adults have different sleep patterns, and we can hear it. And that's something that wasn't the case when she was able to be by herself, let's say. What's the protocol? What's happening with regard to that so that everybody gets as good sleep as possible?
Boy, sleep really is a family matter, isn't it?
Yep.
Most of us share a house, if not a bed, with at least one other family member. And when one person isn't sleeping well, it definitely affects everyone else. What I always suggest is an open and honest conversation about it. So if, for example, perhaps your spouse used to get up early in the morning and leave, and you got a couple of extra hours of quiet sleep, and you're really missing that because now you're bed partner isn't getting up and leaving, but instead tossing and turning in bed in the morning. I think sometimes talking about how important good sleep is to us as individuals with our spouses and partners can be an important opening for the conversation. Another thing is, that sometimes members of couples have different sleep schedules. So one of them might be a bit of a night owl, and one of them may love to get up and greet the sun, and there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of times that just means that the time of day to have quality time together is not late at night or early in the morning when one of you is feeling sleepy. So I think just an open conversation about these issues is really important. In the case of a family member from a different generation living in the home, I think this can be even more challenging. So you could have teenagers, for example, who stay up until the wee hours of the morning and then sleep until 10, but then grandma wants to go to bed at 8 and she's up at 5 o'clock in the kitchen making coffee. And again, I always advocate for an open conversation about how we might be able to disrupt each other's sleep a little less and still allow everyone to have the sleep schedule and routine that works for them.
Yes, you know, one of the things that I have noticed is that my friends who are younger, as somebody who is an advocate for successful aging, I'm very much an advocate for intergenerational friends. So I do my best. And it isn't easy, by the way, in our culture to have friends of a lot of different ages. You might have acquaintances at work, but friends really of different ages is not the way we roll around here. But what I have noticed is that my friends who are mothers, and in my case happens to be mothers, of teenagers are having a much harder time than we are because the kids are home all the time. They are very grumpy. They are not exercising the way they did. They can't sleep. They're up all night. They're using the devices, and they feel bad for them. They don't want to curtail the few little things that are making them happy at the moment. So it is very difficult. And when you brought up the idea of teens, it brought to mind my friends. Now, I want to ask you something a little bit more clinical about kids. And that is it the same? You mentioned to us from the beginning that even though our sleep may be a little bit disruptive and we may have some insomnia because of the pandemic, that's kind of acute and not chronic. But if we have good sleep habits, we'll kind of come back. Is there a difference with teens? Will teens, because they're in their growth spurt stage, maybe be more disrupted by this episode in their life than older adults? Or do we not know that quite yet?
Well, what happens to teenagers actually has to do with our internal biological clock. As a mom of two teenagers during the pandemic myself, I can speak not just as a scientist but also as a parent. There's two things that I've noticed. One is that my kids, because of their ages, have a natural tendency to be a kind of night owl, to stay up a little later and sleep in a little later than either that they did when they were younger or that that adults might typically do. So there is this internal clock of what we call a circadian rhythm tendency to be awake at night and to sleep later in the day. But the other thing that I've noticed, and I have to tell you I've been quite surprised, is that the number of hours of sleep that teenagers need is quite long. And I always, you know, patted myself on the back thinking I was a great parent because my kids sleep, you know, pretty routinely between 8 and 9 hours a night. But without having to get up and go to school in the morning and going to bed at a reasonable hour, although later than the adults in the house, you know, they're sleeping more like 9 or 10 hours a night. And I think that when we think back to, school week routines, a lot of kids actually only get somewhere between 6 or 6.5 hours a night during the week. So they're really shorting themselves maybe 3 or 4 hours a night. And we all know how we would feel if we only slept, 3 or 4 hours less than we need. So I think there really have been two surprises. One is, in a lot of families where the kids used to get up early with everyone else, they're now sleeping through half of the day. And the other is that kids just need, kids including adolescents, still need a lot of sleep. So that can present some challenges. And I also
I'm just going to call for education on this because I think that we're becoming little experts about nutrition, all of us. We're becoming little exercise experts and fitness coaches for our own life. We ought to know a lot more about sleep. We really should. We should know more about it in our basic biology courses, in our basic magazines that we're reading online and offline. And I know that your organizations do that. We're going to give the website one more time, but it would be nice to know that there's nothing wrong with our sun because he's sleeping an extra 2 or 3 hours if he's a teen. I mean, this is
helpful,
or that grandma might be talking in her sleep because she has actually a disorder that might be looked at.
Yeah, you know, I always think that, you know, Thomas Edison, I think, is the one who said sleep is a colossal waste of time. It's been a long, long way, I think, to trying to dispel that myth that actually sleep is part of taking good care of ourselves. And this is obviously most true, as you mentioned, in kids and teens who are still growing, their brains and bodies are still developing. They really need all of the, you know, the restorative processes that happen during good, healthy nighttime sleep.
Yes, and I want to conclude with going backwards, where going backwards in time is from aging to teens and now to babies. Because I've often wondered, when you are a grandma, the first thing you hear from the new parents is, slept like a dream, or this one's not a sleeper. So I wonder, is there a correlation between how you've slept when you're very young and how you might be in sleeping patterns when you're older? I did find that because I went to law school, and I went to law school very early in life. It was the days when if you could read, they threw you out of school because it was baby boomer time and there's no room. So most of us went to graduate school very early. And I didn't get enough sleep, there's no doubt. So I could fall asleep for a day after in exhaustion. But as an adult, I'm not like that. I don't know, is there a correlation between our grandkids that most of my listeners have that are 2 years old or 3 years old and how they're sleeping and how they may be adult sleepers?
Well, I think about it a lot like nutrition. So the eating habits that you develop when you're very young do carry through into your adult life. It doesn't mean you can't change your eating habits, but that's sort of your tendency. So I think that rather than seeing big biological differences where we could specifically point to this child wasn't a good napper when they were an infant and they're not good sleepers when they're adults, we don't see that as much, but what we do see is that in family situations where sleep is not really emphasized as part of staying healthy, that those individuals, as they grow up and become adults, that they, you know, they sort of continue to think that way. You know, I think that some of the challenges with infant sleep is really, it's a normal part of development. I think it's very hard on parents, especially when parents have other obligations, either work or other kids, to try to take care of their own sleep. But it's really important. And I think that when parents do the best that they can to take care of their own sleep when they have an infant or a toddler who is not a great sleeper, as you said it and as I've heard it many times myself, it makes it a lot easier for parents to cope with that and come up with a plan. So all of the healthy sleep habits that we talked about, having a regular schedule day to day, spending the right amount of time in bed, all of that applies even to very, very young children. It does take a few months for a newborn baby to develop that internal clock or circadian rhythm. So, you know, kind of erratic sleep spread throughout the 24-hour day is what we expect for babies for the first few months of their lives. And then we really want to set up habits and routines that encourage them to get most of their sleep at night with, you know, naps during the day in the early years as well. But really, sleep is a family matter. And when there's an infant in the house, I think, you know, it's really hard on the parents and sometimes the other siblings when the infant doesn't sleep well.
Well, it certainly is, and I will end this by saying that my son and daughter-in-law have a 2-year-old, and, of course, they are both working, and they're both working from home, and the daycare center is closed, and it is California. So you put it all together, and you see that everybody has stress on their minds, regardless of age and situation. So I thank you so much, Dr. Martin, for this, and I'm just going to let you wrap it up one more time with that website, because that's a place to go for further education and further focus on sleep. What is our website that's going to educate us?
So the website that we have been talking about is sleepeducation.org. It's a resource provided by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine.
And I thank you all for listening. And as I say every single week, I always say get out there, kids, and make it happen. Recently I've been saying get in there, kids, and make it happen. But make it happen. See you next week.
I'm inappropriate.
Thank you so much for hanging in there.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks. This was a lot of fun, actually.
It really, once we got started, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Your voice can now be heard, Nick.
Awesome.
Yes.
That's Nick.
Yes,
oh, he wants Nick back. I see. Yes, so all I'm saying is that we need more information on this because I'm hanging out with geroscientists. Whose agenda is longevity, healthy longevity. And what they'll tell you all the time, nutrition, exercise, life purpose, and sleep. And sleep is the thing that we have the least education about, I think, of all this. So it's great.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to get a lot of, of course, you're going to get the link. You're going to get this little thing we do for YouTube. With your voice on it, it's going to be on all the disseminators of podcasts, on our newsletter, and our social media, and you put it on all of your social media in any way you want. Use it in any way. It belongs to you. Okay?
Wonderful. Yes. Thank you so much. And
thank you very much for your
help and patience with the technical difficulties. Despite our best efforts, even trying it out yesterday.
Yeah, well, I know, but we did it. And Stuart says
yep.
It sounds wonderful. And thank you,
great.
Nick, for
all
making
right.
this happen.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Moore.
Take care.
Thank you.
Take
bye,
care.
Everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Can we make up for